Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.
Hello and welcome to Pole Position on Rock Sport Radio. Andy Alston with you alongside Adam Todd, broadcasting live on DAB Digital Radio across Central Scotland and tune in and online. We're talking motorsport from 8 till 9. So on the show this week, Mercedes feel the pain as Verstappen wins in the rain. Touring cars are back as Tarkington leads the pack. And who has the upper hand as we get set for Rally Finland? All this and more on Pole Position. Now, Red Bull's Max Verstappen kept his cool to win the German Grand Prix last weekend in one of the most dramatic races of the hybrid era. The rain caused so many problems for the drivers, but Adam, Max Verstappen made it look easy.
Well, he did, but he certainly had his fair share of issues too. I mean, you go back to that start and you're thinking, oh, we're so looking forward to seeing Hamilton Verstappen in the front row of the grid. And then he had a terrible start, as did his teammate Pierre Gasly. It was like Austria all over again. But if we learned anything from Austria, it was not to write off Max Verstappen. He also had a spin as well midway through the Grand Prix. You know, his team arguably, or they did make the wrong decision to put him on the mediums when everybody else was going on to the softs as the track dried. Yet he still won the Grand Prix. Terrible start, spun in the race. I don't think he'll win many more races when he does those two things.
But maybe that's the key to the success, Adam. If he just has a bad start, he goes on and just romps in.
100% win rate, Andy. You can't argue with the facts, can you?
No,
but he's just incredible in the wet. And Hamilton and Verstappen, I think they're in a class of their own in these wet conditions. I mean, remember Max Verstappen's drive in Brazil in 2016, I think it was. It was just sensational. And again, he proved in those wet conditions that he really is one of the best, if not the best.
And it was a terrible weekend, of course, for Mercedes on home soil, with Valtteri Bottas crashing out and Lewis Hamilton spinning twice, finishing the race in ninth place at the end. A little bit of a punishment for the Alfa Romeo team, so that brought Hamilton up slightly. But a terrible weekend overall for the Silver Arrows. So joining us on Pole Position to recap the action, delighted to welcome back James Eagles from our friends at the Checkered Flag. James, Mercedes made a big song and dance of things going into the German Grand Prix, but it was a complete disaster for them.
Yeah, it did backfire, didn't it? Thanks for having me back on again. It was the worst weekend possible for Mercedes. You know, home Grand Prix, this big thing about it, it's our 200th race, the 125 years in motorsport. We'll invite Netflix along as well so they can get a good glimpse of the action. And just everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong. They should really have. The statistics in a wet race mean that, you know, Hamilton should win after the last 10 or so wet races. I think he's won about 8 of them or something like that. They called the conditions. They should have been quicker than Ferrari, but it just all slipped away, quite literally, actually.
And Toto Wolff seemed to suggest after the race that all of the celebrations in the build-up with the one-off liveries, special overalls and what have you, maybe wasn't necessarily the best of ideas. You know, it kind of created a target on their back to an extent. And, you know, Netflix, I dare say, would have been delighted.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm sure the producer opened quite a few bottles of wine that night. but I don't really think that the target on the back sort of thing is totally correct, because we've seen Red Bull do these things. You know, the James Bond collaboration at Silverstone, and they didn't have a great weekend, but it wasn't disastrous. Austria last year, they turned up in Lederhosen and won the race. So I'm not sure it was that. It's just when Mercedes fail, they fail spectacularly. You look at Spain 2016. You know, they don't. They're either perfect or they get the job done, or it just really goes badly. And how many times have we seen Hamilton crash twice, and then crash twice in the wet? And, of course, he was ill throughout the weekend. I just say put this weekend down to some bad fortune and turn it around for Hungary. I mean, they're still comfortable in both championships. If anything, this is more probably decided the Drivers' Championship, given that Bottas had a fantastic chance to gain a lot of points on Lewis.
Do you think it's decided the driver lineup for Mercedes for next year as well, James? And what I mean by that is, You know, Bottas spinning out in the manner that he did last weekend. And I would argue his performance was a little bit below par as well. I expected a little bit more from him. Esteban Ocon waiting in the wings there, as we know at Mercedes. Bottas really needs a good result on Sunday in Hungary.
Absolutely. I think one of the safety car restarts, Bottas lost about 5.8 seconds to Verstappen, which, whatever way you paint it, is not good enough. And he should have got past Stroll. Stroll's a very good defensive driver and drove very well in the late stages of the German race, but really Bottas should have got past him very easily. Fiat did, Vettel did, and he just ventured about 6 inches offline and that was it. And I'd say if that decides his Mercedes career, I don't think it will be down to that. Nico Rosberg thinks that it'll be Hungary and Germany that decide Bottas' future, but I can't see that. It's going to be a collection of what happened in 2018. Okay, he had some bad luck, but he was off the pace. And after Azerbaijan this year, he really hasn't been on Hamilton's level. You look at France, when he almost squandered second place to Leclerc, when he was quite a few seconds in front of him with a few laps to go. Canada, he was completely off the pace as well. And then this weekend was undoubtedly the worst of the bunch. But I don't think it will be these two races. I think it'll be almost a totting up process of poor weekends versus good weekends. And it's difficult when Lewis Hamilton is your teammate, because he can make some very good drivers like Fernando Alonso and Jenson Button and Rosberg as well look decidedly average on some weekends. And that's just it. Verstappen has the same thing. I think Gasly should be doing better, but he is suffering due to Verstappen dragging that car into places where maybe it shouldn't be.
Hi James, Adam here. It was a contrast of emotions for Sebastian Vettel at the German Grand Prix after the disaster of qualifying. It started last and worked his way up to second. That was a great drive from him on the Sunday.
Absolutely. It was almost as if Hamilton and Vettel switched races from their 2018 event. It was a brilliant drive from Vettel and something that he really needed. You could tell he was hurt last year and his form never been the same. But he was open in talking about his accident. He said in the track guide that to watch out the Sachs curve, it can get quite slippy there. But yeah, he put everything behind him and did very, very well. Kept his cool to pass Kvyat, and I don't think he'd have caught Verstappen, but he certainly gave it a good go. He had a fantastic start as well. I think he was up to 12th by the end of lap one. Yeah, a fantastic weekend, and hopefully that's something that he can use to propel him forward for the rest of the season, as Ferrari needs him to be up there in the fight. And if Leclerc's going to have these minor errors, which are not good, but they're understandable for someone of his experience, Vettel then has to take the pressure and carry Ferrari back up the grid and towards this Constructors' Championship fight.
And what did you make of it, Charles Leclerc's incident? He obviously crashed out, and this could have been his first ever victory for Ferrari. He's had a few chances this year, failed to take them. Some have been his own fault, some haven't been. But he also criticised the runoff area. What were your thoughts on that and the way he handled that situation?
It was quite disappointing to see him complain, because that has always been there. It was there last year when it was wet. And I don't know what can be done, because it is a drag strip. They can't put it with a coating or something. I don't know if there's a temporary thing they can do, but it's also completely flat, so there's no drainage, whereas the track here has its natural cambers and everything. The drainage works in the favour of the drivers of keeping the track at a suitable condition, but I don't really know what could have been done about this. At the end of the day, he made a mistake. It was a very small one, but it turned into something quite large. And it's a shame for him, because this pressure will continue to build over when am I going to get my first F1 victory. Bahrain was down to pure misfortune. Austria maybe could have been a touch more resolute in his defence, as he found out at Silverstone against Verstappen. And this one was just a mistake. But he wasn't the only one to go off. He had several world champions going off there. You had Raikkonen, Hamilton, of course. Sainz and Hülkenberg were also fell prey to the ice rink, I think they called it, by about lap 10.
James, I think the one lesson I took from Ferrari's performance at Hockenheim as we go into the Hungarian Grand Prix this weekend is that Sebastian Vettel is still the leader of that team. We could debate whether or not he's the right leader at the right moment for the Scuderia, but he is still the number one driver, unquestionably, for me. There was real doubt over whether he was perhaps maybe the head had gone after Silverstone, bounce back in style. The question is, of course, whether he can take the second half of the year and build momentum. And I'm not necessarily expecting him to build a championship fight, to be honest with you, James, but I'm expecting him to finish the season strongly. Leclerc, we know he's a talented driver. We know he's got bags of potential. And I dare say he will be a world champion one day. But it's unrealistic to expect too much from him. And you mentioned it there as well. It's a mistake that you can understand, and given where he is at this stage in his career, we forget the fact that this is only his second full year in Formula One.
Yes, absolutely. This had to be a learning year. I dare say that maybe he might have one victory by the end. If you spoke to him in Abu Dhabi and said, 1 year ago, what did you expect? He'd have probably said a nice start, sort of good points, fighting for wins, maybe a victory and some podiums. But yes, this was never going to be Leclerc comes in, he dominates the team, dominates the championship. That wasn't going to happen. Vettel is still the senior driver. It's very much his team. He's been there for, well, this is his fifth season there now. And I agree. I don't think he will put in a championship challenge. And I don't think that should be his objective. Just closing the gap to first overtaking Leclerc, then closing the gap to Bottas and Verstappen. I think Verstappen may turn out to be Hamilton's main challenger after all. But just keeping Ferrari ahead of Red Bull, they're helped because Pierre Gasly, his situation is it's not getting any better. I mean, disastrous Hockenheim race, but that has to be the main goal. Get Ferrari in second and just start to close the gap and restore a bit of pride as well. He's taken a lot of knocks over the past few years. If he can get a victory, I think that would be great for him, and he deserves it because he did come back from a very difficult Silverstone weekend in superb fashion.
James, I want to get your thoughts on the Gasly situation. I know lots of people have been having their say, but Helmut Marko has made it quite clear that Gasly will not be replaced this season. But for me, that suggests that there's going to be a driver from outside the Red Bull family coming in for 2020, because otherwise it would be easy enough to bring up either Kvyat or Albon. Both of them have impressed. If they were going to make that change and go for second in the Constructors' Championship, you would do it. Certainly, if it wasn't before Hungary, it would certainly be after it. But if they're kind of keeping their cards close to the chest here, they're committing to Gasly for the rest of 2019. For me, I think that we're going to see someone else come in and partner Max Verstappen for 2020.
Yeah, that's a perspective that I hadn't actually thought of before, but Marko is very blunt in what he said when he was asked about the driver situation. He said, we're not changing this year, and then didn't say anything beyond that. So it is a shame to say that Gasly might well be out. Maybe out of Formula 1. It depends what does happen with the Toro Rosso drivers, whether they'll actually demote him to Toro Rosso again, because he wasn't ready. And I think if they promote Albon, the situation will be much the same. They have to get a driver who is big enough and bold enough, like Daniel Ricciardo, to stand up to Max Verstappen and has that experience. I don't think Kvyat's there, even though he certainly has matured both as a driver and as a person. But the question is, who is available? Hülkenberg, I guess, could be out of Renault. They're not totally happy with his performance stacking up against Ricciardo, given that this is his team. Alonso's a complete no-go, I think, for Christian Horner, so that's out of the question. It'll be quite hard for Red Bull, because they have always said, no, we want to have a junior in the team, in the senior team, to prove that the system has worked. If we can have two, that's even better. Of course, they've got Verstappen, unless he goes off to Mercedes or something in a rather dramatic change. But yes, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. The options from outside are tempting, but don't forget there are going to be a lot of midfield teams as well looking around the driver market, thinking who can we poach to try and make the next step ourselves, as Red Bull did, well, over a decade ago now.
Absolutely. James, always a pleasure to chat on the show. Thanks very much for joining us here on Pole Position.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
That's James Eagles from our friends at the Chequered Flag there. Stay with us as we look ahead to the next round of the British Touring Car Championship up next on Rock Sport Radio.
Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.
All right, we're now set for the next round of the British Touring Car Championship, with the action heading to Snetterton for the sixth event of the season. Now, it's been an interesting one, to say the least. Colin Turkington leading the way at the top of the Drivers' Championship, going into this one on 195 points. He's ahead of Andrew Jordan's 162, with Josh Cook rounding out the final step there in the top three on 148 points. Adam, the British Touring Car Championship always provides absolutely fantastic action, and hopefully we'll be in for more of the same at Snetterton this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been an interesting championship so far. Colin Turkington got a sizeable advantage, but all it takes is one bad weekend, and especially when you have the likes of Reverse Grid and results are depending on your first race. So, you know, it's never over until it's over, and it may look like a fairly big gap that Turkington's got at the top over Andrew Jordan, but anything can change. One bad weekend, and then it could change. As I said, you can get a couple of wins in a row, which is exactly what Colin Turkington did last time out at Oulton Park. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this weekend. But as you mentioned, you know, free race in one day, it's terrific action, and I'm looking forward to it.
I dare say the interesting thing with Turkington as well, of course, remember last year, only actually won a single race, but it was that consistent performance that bagged him the title. This year, though, he's got a few more wins under his belt and still leading the way.
Yeah, he's just upped his level, hasn't he? I mean, last season only taking that one race victory, and this season he's taken a lot more race wins, and that's probably the difference at the moment between the likes of Turkington and those who are chasing Andrew Jordan. I mean, he's certainly very much in the mix. He's had a few wins, Josh Cook, Rory Butcher, but, you know, Turkington proved last year that it's not all about the wins, and you can get through on consistency because it's such a long season. But this season, I think Turkington's up to his game, and it's going to be very difficult for anyone to get close to him.
Credit to Rory Butcher, Adam. Fourth in the standards so far. You know, he's had a fantastic season.
Yeah, I have to admit, I didn't see Rory Butcher being fourth at this stage of the season, but he's done terrific, and it all started with a terrific opening weekend at Brands Hatch, and since then he's really kicked on. He's had a few disappointing results in there, but overall it's been a very, very successful season for Rory Butcher, and great to see a Scottish driver up near the front as well. So, you know, he's not out of contention either. As I said, if he can pull a couple of wins together this weekend, and it just puts the pressure on Turkington, but the likes of Andrew Jordan, Josh Cook, Rory Butcher, Ash Sutton, they all need to start putting a bit more pressure on Turkington and really take the fight to him.
Ash Sutton's interesting one that you mentioned. He's currently fifth in the Drivers' Championship. He's tied, well, joint fourth, I should say. He's tied with Rory Butcher on 147 points. It's been another interesting season for Sutton, because last year, there were a lot, you know, he went in there and a lot of people expecting him to go on and have another strong year. You know, it did all right in Croft, of course, two victories in there. Snetterton got one in Rockingham, Knockhill as well, of course. But it was a tough start to the year for Ash Sutton, whereas 2019, he's got a couple of podiums early on, but it's just not quite, again, coming together for him.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the one thing about Colin Turkington is, apart from the very first race of the season, he's always been in the points since then, I believe. And for Ash Sutton, he's had a few races where he's not been able to score a point. And it comes down to the magic word in motorsport, which is consistency. Turkington's not been... Turkington has had the consistency this season, and he's had the race victories. So it will be very difficult for someone to beat Colin Turkington. But as you mentioned, Ash Sutton, you know, top quality driver as well. So, you know, again, that's the great thing about the touring car, because it's so competitive, so exciting. Anything can happen, and any driver can really be up there come the end of the weekend. Free races, it's a long time, so it'll be great to watch the battle this weekend.
And one driver who will be keeping a close eye on is, of course, Scotland's Aidan Moffat, who will be getting behind the wheel of a new Laser Tools racing car, swapping his Mercedes A-Class for an Infiniti Q50. Aidan joins us on the show now, and Aidan, first of all, could you just give us a background as to how this move came about?
Yeah, it was kind of a bit all over the place, to be honest. We purchased both the Infiniti Q50s earlier in the year, and it wasn't with the intention of bringing them into the British Touring Car Championship. But when our engineers came over from Italy to look at the Mercedes A-Class and what we were going to do development-wise. The car was sitting there, and they looked at the Infiniti and seen the potential of it, and they wanted to try and get that car out for the start of the year. But this is the first year that we have run things alone. It's Liverpool Racing. They've run it alone up in Scotland from our base at Avon Automotive Racing Restoration. So we put that on hold a bit to try and find our own feet. And everything we've done, the Mercedes has been better than ever. Every track we go to, our pace is better than previous years. But with new cars coming out, the Mercedes isn't quite quick enough. I mean, all three of us are consistently mid-pack. So after the engineers looked at Infiniti, we decided we were going to bring that out for next season. But with a poor year, I kind of made the call that I wanted to bring the car out now. Obviously, we're not really anywhere in the championship, so initially, we're not going to be busting on the fastest weekend, I think. I think if you're in the mid-pack, we've done exceptionally well with how quickly we've tried to get this car running. I think we started prep work on it 4 weeks before the tyre test, and that's usually something people plan for months. So it's been a very quick turnaround. I think we'll be an initial step back, but hopefully it'll be a case of one step back, two steps forward. We know there's a lot of potential in the car. I need to learn the rear-wheel drive discipline. The team need to learn how to set up a rear-wheel drive car with the engineers. So I think the big thing is, because we were struggling already this year, why not kind of write this season off, but give ourselves half a year of extra testing, half a year of extra me learning as a driver, and hopefully hit the ground running next year rather than struggling all year to then have to spend the first few races of next year learning a car anyway.
Aidan, you're going from a right-hand drive setup to a left-hand drive setup here as well. So, how will that affect things on track?
Right-hand drive to left-hand drive isn't too big a deal, to be honest. It's something that within a few laps you get used to it. I think in the first two laps you'll knock your hand off the door going for a gear change, and then you'll take far too much curb when you position yourself as opposed to the car. But once you've done that, you kind of you get settled in. I mean, last year when I was doing the, albeit briefly, TCR Championship, that was a left-hand drive alpha, so I was going 1 week left-hand drive to 1 week right-hand drive, back and forward. So at least this time I've been out in the Infiniti, and I've only been in the Infiniti, so it's kind of, I'll be all I know for the rest of the season to an extent.
Now, we had Infiniti Q50s running in the BTCC back in 2015. So, Aidan, how does this current car compare from the one that took part back then?
Obviously, it's the running the Swindon engine, which has been through a few years worth of upgrades. It's when it was last out, it was the GPRM spec. It's now RML spec. On top of that, we have done some modifications chassis-wise to the car to improve the car. Again, the car's not as best it'll be this weekend. We've seen a lot of things that we are working on and got things going in the background to develop the car further with regards to cooling packages, aero. We've got a lot of things. We know what we need to do with the car. I mean, we maybe could have, if we brought it out next season, the car would be a fantastic car. I think it's still going to be a good car, but the way things have worked out, it was, we won't say it's the car at its best just now, but it's going to let us learn how to set the car up, and it's going to let me learn how to drive it. So hopefully next year we can really be at the sharp end of the championship.
Hi, Aidan. Adam here. Just give us an indication of how challenging it has been for everyone behind the scenes to get the car race ready for this weekend.
For this weekend, even for myself, just trying to learn the discipline more. It's kind of been long days in work, then drive down to Silverstone Tuesday to do some simulation stuff, the eyes on, drove back home yesterday, then back and work today, and through to Glasgow, getting the last some badges to just complete some of the spares, because if everything was so last minute, and even ordering badges for the spares package was running about today, still sorting that. The team, they've been starting at kind of 8 in the morning, working till 9 at night for a few days. Even the trucks had to leave, drive kind of through the night to get there early today because the car still wasn't finished yesterday and they were still doing a lot of work. So usually the trucks would finish at, maybe about, leave at noon to drive down to the track for today's setup day. I think the truck drivers had a late one and an early rise just because everything was so last minute, trying to get everything right.
And Aidan, you mentioned that you might not see the instant success, so this is very much looking longer term and perhaps even to the new set of regulations in a few years.
Yeah, definitely. I think rear-wheel drive will be the way to go when the new hybrid comes in. Yeah, I mean, the Mercedes are still a very, very good car, but it wasn't at a stage where... I mean, Adam was a fantastic driver with a lot of experience. He was third in the championship, or at least until the very end last year, and even nowhere this year. I'm nowhere. So it was a case of we knew we weren't going to be in the Mercedes next year. We knew we wanted to be rear-wheel drive, and it was kind of make this bold move, drop back a bit potentially, but benefit us long term, as you say. So yeah, it was definitely a decision based on the future of myself and Laser Tools Racing.
And Aidan, you mentioned earlier on about your relationship with Hexagon Racing Systems in Milan. Tell us a bit more about that and how does that relationship work?
So Hexagon, they're involved in a lot of championships, kind of GT championships. They're currently running the Chinese Touring Car Kia program. Hexathron run all three Mercedes, even though they officially do it at home for their two cars, and we do it ourselves for the two racing car. But they still run all the Mercedes. They've been in world touring cars. They've done a lot of the top racing. They've come over to the event. Come over with our testing, obviously. Just run it as normal. They'll fly it to the workshop whenever there's things needing done. And then they'll go back home to Milan where they've got the whole simulator set up and they can run through different settings on a simulator with all the data that we've collected through testing to try and get benefits for each time we go to the circuit and keep trying to find something new and find a few more terms.
And you've got a great fan base behind you, and you've just came top of a 2019 fans' favourite tournament as well, as one of the most popular drivers on the grid. What's your kind of message to your supporters ahead of the action this weekend?
I think for my supporters, don't expect too much. That's for sure. I think this is a choice. I've been frustrated this year, and it kind of takes that fun away from it. And yeah, as much as it's a serious thing, a career thing, a job, etc., you get into racing to have fun. We're a family team. I've got a lot of friends involved in the team, and we all have fun while doing the job to the best of our abilities and being professional. But we like to enjoy ourselves as well, which is what racing was always about for me, getting involved with it. Ever since I was a kid, watching my dad and Alan Potts, who's my team manager. So I've always just loved being involved with racing. And this year with the Mercedes, it's took the edge off it because it's been frustrating. So with the Infinity deal, it gave me a bit of a new lease of life. I'm fighting again. I'm kind of like a kid again, where you're not sleeping much at night, just looking forward to getting back to the racetrack. So yeah, we're going to struggle, but I think long-term it's going to be great for us, and having all the fans, kind of seeing so many people backing the decision, so many people commenting on the way the car looks and being excited for us, it's a special feeling when there's so many people behind you. It's one of those things you never thought you'd be in that position, where there's all these people getting behind you and supporting you and wanting you to do well. So, it's a great feeling, but yeah, to any fans, come round, swing by and come and see the car in the flesh.
Excellent, Aidan. Thanks very much for joining us on the show and best of luck out there this weekend.
Thank you very much.
That's Laser Tools Racing driver Aidan Moffat speaking to us on Pole Position. Let's head to Brands Hatch now for the penultimate round of the British GT Championship. We'll find out more from TF Motorsport driver Ash Hand after his number 97 car won the GT4 class last time out at Spa. Ash, thanks very much for joining us. That was the first win for the team in the GT4 category since 2014, I believe, as well. There must be a real energy in the camp there as well. Everyone's so happy and looking forward to the action this weekend.
Hi there. Yeah, it's great to be on the show. Thank you for having me. So, yeah, you're right. There's a massive pump in the camp as well. We're doing so well in terms of championship as well. We knew we were going into Spa. It was a big weekend for us in terms of championship for the team. And for myself and Tom Cannon, my teammate, we knew we had to take the 37.5 points, but it was a great weekend for us all round. We were fast in pre-practice, fast in qualifying, and in the race, we were phenomenally fast. We started sixth, went from sixth on the grid to second in the first lap. So we had an amazing first half of the lap, managed to get all the positions we needed. And then we sat there with the other cars in the race against McLaren. They were fast at Spa, which we always knew they were going to be. But we managed to stay with them, and then at the end of the race, after the pit stop, Tom Cannon managed to go out and take that last place and get us into first position. So as a team, we did a great job at Spa. The team did a great job being a car that could compete and win round there. And to win at a circuit like Spa, it's just magical. It's an absolute great feeling. The amount of history that's been there, I don't think you can beat it, really.
And of course, there was drama at the bus stop hairpin on the penultimate lap between Tom and the Tolman McLaren of Josh Smith, a bit of a coming together. How nerve-wracking was that for you, having to watch on as your teammates out there are dicing for the lead so late in the race, of course?
Oh, it's so much more nerve-wracking watching than being in the car driving. When you're driving, you're in control. And I think when you all my life, I've driven in sort of kart series where I've been on my own. So you're right. Watching my teammate catch the back of the McLaren and then have to overtake him in order to get the points we needed. Tom always knew that he was going to have to make the move. And to be honest, he did a great job of it. He really did do a great job of the overtake. And when Josh Smith turned in on him, that was his own doing. We always felt like Tom was going to be okay in the office after the race because he turned in on him. But it was so nerve-wracking watching him do that move, watching him turn in on him, watching him touch doors, and to get to that point of the race after you've raced for what an hour and 56 minutes or whatever it was, to be then making contact with another car, it's so, so nerve-wracking to watch. And like you say, you almost feel like you've got more pressure on your watching than when you're in the car yourself. It's a very strange feeling. I suppose you've worked hard all weekend and all season to get to the point that you're in the position to go and win a race, and then to get there on the last lap and that your teammate's making a move in the car that you've helped get to that position is crazy.
Sounds very dramatic indeed. Ash, you're part of the Aston Martin Academy scheme. How did that come about?
I was fortunate enough, I think it was really early on this year, that I started speaking to the Aston Martin Academy. There was an academy process that we had to go through, all the drivers went through it, and I was lucky enough to be chosen to be on the academy. The great things about being with the Aston Martin Racing Academy, you've got people like Charlie Eastwood, you've got people like Johnny Adams around you, you've got Nicky Sim around you in the TF Sport team. So you've got a great support system of drivers around you that have completed great things. Like even last week, Nicky Sim and Charlie Eastwood, they won the class in the Spa 24 Hours. So to have people like that around you mentoring you constantly and just being able to lean on it weekends is such a benefit for my racing career. It's unbelievable. So now I'm really appreciative to the Aston Martin Racing Academy to be a part of that.
And Ash, one thing I've always wanted to know about GT driving is how you set the car up to keep both drivers happy, because everyone has a different style and a way they like the car set up.
Yeah, so me and Tom are quite fortunate. And it's fortunate, for, probably more for Tom. Because it, he had a driving style at the start of the year that made the car go fast. And he was really quick in the car from the offset. And I had done a lot of racing in the car. So it was easier for me to adapt more to the driving style that was going to make the car go fast. Other than changing the setup for the car to how I'd like to drive it. So I think the best thing, really, in the GT series is if you work out how to get the car to go fast and then you adapt your driving style to the car, I think that's the way to make a GT car go fast.
Ash, how important is it that when you hand over that car to your teammate, you're giving them one that's in good condition, that's ready to go, and you haven't worn out the car and compromised your teammate in any way as they look to finish the race?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a huge aspect of the racing. It's, if you're out in the car first, you have to think about stuff like the brake. You have to be seeing how hard you're pushing the car. You don't want to be making contact with anybody else. Because at the end of the day, if you're starting the race, you're responsible for your teammates' season as well. And you'd never want to be letting your teammate down by giving him a car that's back, that you'd hammered the brakes on, or you'd made contact with somebody, or the steering wasn't straight, or, yeah, there's so many things that you can do while you're out there to make the car be worse for wear when you come in. And ultimately, you're costing yourself so much time during the race if you give your teammate the car back in a bad state. You need to be making sure that the car finishes the race in as good condition as possible, with the brakes not too worn. Like when we raced at Spa, for example, the other weekend, we got to the end of the race and we'd looked after the car and we had good brakes. The McLaren's a lot harder on its brakes than we are. So it was a good thing for us that we could use our brakes at the end of the race. And the Aston Martin was really good on the brakes right at the end, which allowed us to get past and round the outside of the McLaren as the braking zone to the bus stop. So that was one of the things that we thought about that we needed to look after before the end of the race.
And Ash, what's the advice you would give to any young driver who's listening and they're going through karting and they're maybe contemplating their next move? What would you say to them to help them kind of smooth that transition as they move out of karting?
I think the best piece of advice to give people that are looking to make this transition, you don't make it too early that you haven't made the most of your racecraft through karting. But I think GT racing is a great platform to move into for a young driver, I think, because you've got so many manufacturers and people looking at you from a young age. And the racing is so competitive, and I think the world of GT racing is very professional. And you're in a good category of people to learn from. You've got the pro drivers around you, so even if you're an AM driver, there's lots of really experienced people and drivers to look up to and make the most of their knowledge as you move up through the ranks. And I think when you go and race other series, you don't necessarily have that much experience out on circuit with you at the same time. So I think there's a massive gain from racing GT cars for a young driver because you are around so much experience at the race circuit.
Great stuff. Ash, thanks very much for joining us on the show. Hope things go well for you out there this weekend.
Thank you. I'll speak to you soon. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Bye.
That's Ashan from TF Motorsport there speaking to us on Pole Position. Now, let's move on to the rally stage because the World Rally Championship is back this weekend with the action heading to Finland for the 9th round of the season. There's not much splitting the drivers at the top of the table, but it's Ott Tänak who leads the way on 150 points. He's just four clear of Citroën Seb Ogier, with Hyundai's Thierry Neuvolt third on 143 points. But the big news going into this event is that Hayden Paddon won't return after crashing his M Sport Fiesta and testing earlier this week. So let's find out more on this story by speaking to rally expert David Halley, who joins us now. David, absolutely devastating, not just for Hayden and John, but everyone behind the scenes at M Sport as well.
not just behind the scenes at N-Sport, behind the scenes in New Zealand. This was a situation, if you recall, where Hyundai... Now, Hayden has been with Hyundai. He was with Hyundai up until 2018. He's backed by Hyundai New Zealand, which is where he's from. And Hyundai decided they wanted to bring another driver in for Finland, and they decided to go for Craig Breen. Now, Craig Breen, a lovely guy, and he has kept himself in the view of all the team managers. He has been tarting himself around any car that will get him a ride this year, and has done incredibly well, leading the Irish Tarmac Championship, winning in Ypres, rallying in Italy. He's put himself out there, and he was chosen. Now, that leaves Hayden with an awful feeling in his stomach that he's there with Hyundai, and they've overlooked him. He spoke to his sponsors in New Zealand, including Hyundai, and Hyundai New Zealand gave their permission for him to go and drive. There was a car available at M-Sport. He signed up to do that, paid his money. Everything was looking very, very good until he turned it into a Ford car earlier this week by rolling it into a ball.
David, it was an incident as well that, you know, when you watch it back on the onboard, it's not as if he makes a mistake or anything like that. You know, it's just it's an unfortunate incident where there just happens to be a rock on the road and he's in the wrong place at the wrong time.
And he pulled that rock out, but he didn't know he'd done it. In testing on these events, they don't go the same direction all the time on the stage. They hire a piece of road, they block it off, they go through all the safety procedures, and the car will go in both directions to get used to it. He's obviously come down that round that corner, gone slightly close to the edge, pulled a rock out behind him. He doesn't know he's there. He doesn't know he's done it. Next time he sees that rock, it's far too late and it's under his wheel and the front of the car is in the air. The steering wheels don't work if they ain't touching the ground.
Oh, absolutely not. And David, with Elfyn Evans out injured and Gus Greensmith stepping in, does this all mean that there's going to be a little bit more pressure on Timo Suninen to not just lead M-Sport but put in a good performance on home soil this weekend?
I think Timo would want to put in a good performance on home soil, irrespective of who else was in the team. It is his event. He's, you know, 6 years ago he's in a WRC3 car that was held together with tape by the time he'd finished the event, and much in the way that Colin McRae used to finish events, with the car held together with baling twine and tape. But he's a quick driver. He's got Jarno Laitinen with him now, who's providing that guiding hand. And they did so well last time out on the podium. He's got to be looking very much as the man to do something and come of age possibly at this event.
David, Seb Ogier has just said before the event that next year will be his last in the World Rally Championship. Of course, he joined Citroën in a 2-year deal this season. He said that would be his final contract, of course. Well, not sure if I really believed him at that point, you know. And as much as I would love Ogier to stay, I wonder if all this becoming an ambassador for Extreme E and things like that, I get the impression he's perhaps going to be dipping his toes in lots of stuff. He's maybe got some interest in other categories that he'd like to take part in.
I'm sure that's exactly what he wants to do. We saw the same with the other Sebastian when he was doing all his championship. He looked at other things. He did Le Mans and got involved in Porsche racing. And these guys just love to have a wheel in their hands and be giving it full moo all the time. What's not to like about it? And I think, you know, Sebastian has hinted many times about not doing the full championship because it takes him away. He's got a young family. He is away from the family a lot. And yes, he travels by private jet and all the rest of it, but it's still a time away from the family that he would rather spend with the family. He's earned so much money he never has to work again, so he can pick and choose what he wants to do going forward, and I'm sure that's exactly what he'll do.
David, I want to get your thoughts on Jari Matti Latvala, because he's currently, and it's hard to believe it when you look at it, but he is joint ninth in the Drivers' Championship, and I dare I say, if there's going to be one event that kickstarts his season, it's got to be this one.
Got to be. Absolutely got to be. We talk about Jari a lot. Jari is a very, very emotional driver. He has to be in the right place in his head. He has to be in the right place with his car. A lot of the drivers will have a car that's not exactly how they want it. The car will change during the event. The tyres will wear. Bits of the car will wear. And Jari has to have the car exactly how he wants it. He can't deal with any tiny imperfection. A lot of the other drivers, your Sebastian Ogier, we know that sitting's not the best thing in the world in terms of handling, but he's got the skill and the belief to hang on to that car and point it where it needs to go. Just look how Esa-Pekka Lappi, who's no slouch, who won in the Toyota, how he's struggling with that C3 because it doesn't do what he wants it to do.
And David, we've had the Thursday ceremonial. Just want to get quick thoughts on Thierry Neuville because he's came out on top. How important is this weekend for him and Nicholas? Because second half of the season last year, things maybe didn't go their way. Things fizzled out. What does he have to do this weekend in order to get a strong result and, more importantly, stay in this title fight?
He said in at Shakedown this morning where he wanted to be on Sunday was ahead of his title rivals, and he's absolutely right. We saw last time out that when Sebastian Ogier makes a mistake, his rivals don't seem to be able to really capitalise. They had their own little problems towards the end. So what should have been a 20-something point margin between Oktanak and Sebastian Ogier is 4 points because it just didn't work out for him at the end of Sardinia. It's amazing how Sebastian manages to hang on in there when things aren't going his way, and then when they go his way, he capitalises while his rivals falter, and that's really characterised his 6 championships to date. And it's an interesting one. They're all going into this. Ott, we haven't spoken about, but he's coming off the back of his massive win in Estonia, and he's had a nice break in this break we've had in the championship. He's had a bit of fun on Estonia, winning that event. His tail's up. He's ready for this one.
Well, guys, I have to say, during the summer break, I have missed this prediction time. Scores are level, neck and neck in the standings. Is that nervous laughter from the pair of yous? I think it is. David, we'll start with you. Who's going to win this weekend?
Tanak.
I was trying to avoid mentioning Tanak just on the off chance that we might get away with it and I could take Tanak.
I knew that we were both going to choose Tanak. It was a case of who goes first, who was going to choose Tanak. I think with all our hopes and expectations, it's Ott to lose rather than anybody else. And I think it'll be interesting. The second, third and fourth are going to be the real interesting positions to see who's going to come through this, because I've got a great deal of hope for Craig Breen to do something special.
So I'm going to go a bit left field. I think Chris Meek will do quite well, but I'm going to say Yari Matti. I'm going to try and take the lead in the standings. I think if ever there is an event, you know, and the stars align at some point this year in the World Rally Championship for Yari Matti Latvala, it has got to be at Rally Finland. So I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm going to go Yari Matti.
Interesting there. I will keep you posted and we'll find out who comes out on top next week. Looking forward to that rally.
Yep. All right, David, thank you very much, as always, for your time here on Pole Position.
Not at all. We will do the post-mortem next week.
And there's rally expert David Halley there. All right, let's get the latest from the Scottish scene now by getting the Superfast Scotch Roundup with Glenn Alcock.
Hi, good evening, guys, and hello to everybody who's listening. So, Blackpan, 24 hours at Spa. So, Sandy Mitchell alongside teammates James Poole and Jordan Witt. They took the top spot in the Silver Cup, driving the Lamborghini Huracan GT3. It was a very, very wet race, which was red flagged in the morning due to the horrendous conditions, and it didn't resume for some hours later. Sandy is only 19 years old, and he was the second youngest driver participating in the race, which featured 72 cars. Unfortunately, some of the other Scots didn't have quite as good luck as Sandy, so there were some issues there. The biggest one being for Graham Davidson, who had an off at Blanchimont, one of the highest speed parts of the legendary track, after being pushed off by another competitor. So Graham was taken to hospital. I talked to him on Monday, and he's feeling a bit tender, but otherwise it's perfectly fine, and he's fit to race. He'll be back at British GT this weekend as well. Talking of British GT, so Graham's British GT Aston Martin teammate, 2017 Le Mans GT Pro winner, Johnny Adams, suffered some bad luck during the Spa 24 hours when a wheel hub broke very early in the race, so that put his race off right at the start. Another British GT driver competing was Glenn Geddy in his Bentley Continental GT, who also retired early in the race. Finlay Hutchison was there, and he suffered damage to his Audi R8 LMS and also had to retire. Race winner Sandy Mitchell said, "I don't think I've ever raced in conditions as bad as that. At times it was like driving on ice, so it sounds like the Hockenheim drag strip or Knockhill on a summer's day." So Louise Calder, she won both rounds of the Scottish Sprint Championship at Kames, and Calder Motorsports heading to Kirkeston for the next round of the British Sprint Championship this weekend. There was some bad news from there, so obviously last weekend there was a loss for competitor Dr. Paul Conn during a 500 Motor Racing Club of Ireland meeting. I'd like to extend my condolences to his friends and family. It's just one of these things, I think, that brings back, you know, the risks associated with motorsport, and especially kind of open cockpit racing. This weekend, looking ahead, so we've got BTCC from Snetterton, British GT at Brands Hatch. We've got British Superbikes at Thruxton, and closer to home, we've got Superlap Scotland at Knockhill on the Saturday and the Sunday, and I'm going to be making a guest appearance there in the C1. So we've got an F1 demo again in the Footwork FA13, if the weather permits. If it doesn't, then it will be on a static display. The Scottish Legends will be out on track, and I'm out in one of those next week doing a Legends Unlimited experience, so I'll tell you a little bit about that next week, and I'm looking forward to it. The MG Trophy for MGZRs and the BMW Compact Cup are also out on track, so it's going to be an action-packed weekend at Knockhill. And one final wee thing just of interest. So on this day in 1965, Jim Clark won his second and final Formula One World Championship with a victory at the Nürburgring. And if you've not been along to the new Jim Clark Motorsport Museum, then you really need to go along and see it, especially before they start changing the cars around and stuff like that. So get yourself there early, and it's really something to be seen.
Absolutely, and Glenn, that sounds like a very fitting way to round up the Superfast Scots roundup for this week. Thanks very much for joining us here on the show.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
That's Glenn Alcock there with the Superfast Scots roundup here on Pole Position. All right, now it's time for a little bit of this.
Final lap on Pole Position on Rock Sport Radio.
For that time of the show, Adam, as you tell us six stories from the world of motorsport this week in just 60 seconds. So it's a new month, it's a clean slate, we'll see how you get on in the month of August. July started brightly and then fizzled out a wee bit, didn't it, you know?
I'm going to say this just now, looking at what I've got coming up, I think it's going to be a tough one, so expectation management here,
right,
going to be a tough one.
Right, okay, we'll see how you get on this time round, Adam, as your time starts now.
The F1 Renault team have announced that the driver of a team truck who was involved in a crash while travelling to the Hungarian Grand Prix has returned home after being released from hospital. Renault said their preparations for the weekend have not been affected by the incident. The Formula 1 broadcast team have revealed that a fire broke out in the TV compound before the third practice session at the German Grand Prix. The fire destroyed the inside of a truck which broadcast footage across the globe, but meant to race against time as other broadcasters provided equipment to help out. The Catalan government has revealed it will give financial backing to fund the Spanish Grand Prix next year. It means that next season's calendar could rise to 22 races, with Vietnam and Netherlands set to host Grand Prix. IndyCar has delayed its next engine rollout by a year. The series will now implement a single-source hybrid system in its race cars for the 2022 season. M Sport will celebrate founder Malcolm Wilson's 40 years in business at this weekend's Rally Finland. To mark the occasion, the team's cars will carry a commemorative logo harking back to the original Malcolm Wilson motorsport design, with drivers wearing red gloves in celebration of Wilson's Ruby anniversary. And finally, MotoGP returns this weekend after the summer break. Marc Marquez goes into the Czech Grand Prix with a 58-point advantage over his nearest challenger, the Dakar's Andrea Dovizioso. You've got to give me that.
Tell you what, you know Scottish people speak quickly, Adam, but I think that must have been a record. To tell you what,
I need a lie down after this. Yeah. I need a lie down there.
And just a great one to round off with, actually. MotoGP, of course, returning this weekend. Not even had a chance to speak about MotoGP on the show this week, Adam. Marc Marquez going in there to the Czech Grand Prix. Is it fair to say we should look away from Marc Marquez and look beyond that, and we'll see a very interesting fight for the title emerging in there?
Yeah, I mean, Marc Marquez is just in a league of his own, isn't he? Dovizioso's not had the best of seasons either. Danilo Petrucci's there or thereabouts, Alex Rins. So yeah, the battle for second is going to be what we're going to be interested in the second half of the season. It's a case of when, not if, will Marquez win the World Championship again.
And just finally, briefly, Adam, who else should be keeping an eye on the MotoGP Czech Grand Prix this weekend?
I think Fabio Quartararo, the rookie that's just doing sensational things on the satellite Yamaha. The next Rossi, who knows?
Oh, absolutely, that's one to keep an eye out. And a fitting one as well with Rossi, question marks over him. Can that man there pick up the baton? And unfortunately, that's all we've got time for on Pole Position this week. But we'll be back from 8 o'clock next Thursday night to do it all again. My thanks to Adam, to our guests, and to you for joining as well, of course. Stay tuned for the Rock Zone coming up next on Rock Sport Radio. We've got lots of great songs right here on the way.
Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.